Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Brian Murray, and I represent Alejandrina and Olegario Sanchez. This appeal raises a lot of the issues Your Honors just heard in the first appeal, and in light of the government's statement that they didn't have a conceptual problem with the notion that the cumulative hardship question is a legal question you can review, what I want to focus on is the second point that I wanted to make, which is that merits question of did the agency apply the correct standard in adjudicating the Sanchez's case. As Your Honors have already pointed out, to rule on cancellation of removal, the agency must examine cumulatively the hardship to each qualifying relative. With respect to this case, it's not enough, as the IJ did here, to pay lip service. That's Mascaro, which is a mem dispo, but I think the point is well taken. You can't just say up front, I'm going to perform a cumulative analysis, and then have the court just assume that that's what happened.
Now, who are the in this case, we have more than one qualifying relative. We have the two parents who are LPRs.
Yes, Your Honor.
And we've got four children?
Yes, Your Honor.
Are there any other qualifying relatives?
No.
Okay, so we've got six, two parents and four children. Okay.
We've got Mrs. Sanchez Luna, Alejandrina's mother, who's Rosina. She's 78, Antonio at 75, and then the four children, Diego, Elizabeth, Andrew, and Adrian. Our point here is simply that if you read the government's brief, and I don't think you'll find anything in there, and I don't think government counsel is going to be able to point you to anything today in the IJ's decision that actually shows the IJ doing a cumulative analysis. To the contrary, here, the fault lies in how he looked at these things. Just as if you look at one person, if 10 is the threshold we have to get over for hardship, if you look at each person and say, that's a 2, it doesn't work, that's a 2, it doesn't work, you can easily get rid of everybody. And that's what we would submit happened here. Whereas if you add the 2s together, the 4 children, the 2 parents, you easily exceed the 10. And we contend that's what should have happened. If you read the 29 pages, and again, we have to take the agency at its word, it's the IJ's decision that's controlled. If you read the 29 pages, what you find is the immigration judge starting with the parents, conceding that care for the mother is needed, and then determining that because there's somebody else who could potentially do that, no hardship to her.
But that's the mean sister-in-law in Fresno, right?
That's right.
Or rather, the daughter-in-law is to those with respect to the mother.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. And then once the judge concludes that, he stops and says, okay, now I will move on to consider the 4 children. There's no sort of cross-linking of the hardship of the 4 children being separated from their grandparents who they've lived with for lo these many years. There's no talk of the hardship on, you know, from either of those perspectives, the children losing grandparents, the grandparents losing children. And that's assuming that the grandparents were to stay and the children go. It could be that all of them go, which is a whole different set of hardships. It's the cross-linking that didn't happen. But then he moves on to the children and sort of describes them, again, sort of as an agglomeration. Here are 4 children. Some speak Spanish well, some don't. Some write well, some don't. All in all, this is nothing different than what happened to any other family, so no hardship. It's the divide-and-conquer method of analysis that we would contend was not appropriate here. What's required under the statute and under the BIA's own precedent is a cumulative analysis to each of these people and then together the level of the hardships. Now, just to be clear, we're not asking the court to reweigh those hardships. All we're asking is a remand to the BIA and, I guess, on from there to the IJ to do that correctly in the first instance. And with that, I reserve the rest of my time.
Okay. Thank you. Response?
Corey Farrell on behalf of the government. Again, the issue presented in this case is whether this court has jurisdiction to review the denial of Petitioner Leyva's cancellation of removal application for failure to establish exceptional and extremely unusual.
We have a little more to work with in this case. What evidence do you have that the IJ did consider this hardship cumulatively?
Well, here, the immigration judge several times stated the standard, and although paying lip service to the standard is not sufficient, he stated the standard, looked at the factors and the evidence presented, and then analyzed those, and again at the end stated cumulatively, taken separately or cumulatively, that the hardship standard was not met. And that was looking at both the hardship to the parents and the children. And again, there are no magic words required. We have to look at the immigration judges.
But this kind of, you know, it does kind of look like there's a little bit of divide and conquer, a little bit.
How so? You're
well, that is, he goes down through each one. It's clear, each one. And then basically says, you know, I looked at, also looked at them cumulatively.
Well, and
to meet the test. But there really isn't an analysis that puts it all together. And that, you know, in this one, there are more people involved. That's it's a little bit different than what we just heard.
Right. And, Your Honor, I would also submit that in this case, there was the parents had to be divided from the children a little bit because there was an alternative finding for Petitioner Sanchez. His application for cancellation was denied as a matter of discretion and also for failing to show the hardship to the children. And the children were his only qualifying relatives. So that analysis only applied to Petitioner Sanchez.
Well, he's in a different situation.
That's correct. And then with Petitioner Leyva, the immigration judge looked at her parents and her children taken together.
I'm going to make you go through your paces here. Could you point me in the IJ's order to the portions where the IJ says I'm considering this hardship cumulatively?
Yes, sir. I
wouldn't want you to have a wasted trip from Washington, D.C.
Thank you. I'm page 53 of the record, I believe. It is page 3 of the immigration judge's decision in the top paragraph. He says this hardship can be established separately or in a cumulative nature. And then...
Okay, that just says it can be. It doesn't say you're doing it yet.
And then on page 66 of the record, page 16 of the immigration judge's decision, he lays out the standard. The court must consider all of the factors presented cumulatively.
Okay, that's again, he just elaborates on the standard.
Correct.
Okay, now where does he apply it?
So far we got boilerplate.
Yeah. And then page 76, page 26 of the immigration judge's decision, in the second paragraph, the first full paragraph, he states that the court has considered the hardship separately and cumulatively, but finds simply that respondents don't meet the standard separately or cumulatively.
Yeah, you know, there was I can't think of the name of the case right now, but there was a board decision not too long ago where they did a cumulative analysis, and it was much more thorough and extensive than this. It's that board decision is cited here someplace. I can't remember the name of it. Not In Re Encinas. Maybe it's Adanzola.
And respectfully, Your Honor, the statute and the regulations don't lay out exactly what the immigration judge has to do.
If I'm going to be really sort of nitpicky about language, I'm looking at AR 76 or 26 of the IJ's order, the sentence you quite properly directed our attention to. The IJ says, and the court has considered this hardship separately and cumulatively, but finds that the respondents do not meet the standard of exceptional, extremely unusual hardship for their children and or parents separately or cumulatively. I could read that saying, well, he looked at the children cumulatively, and then he looked at the parents cumulatively. But he didn't look at all six of them cumulatively.
Possibly, Your Honor, you could read it that way, but the government's position is that when you look at the entire decision and don't just take out one sentence, that the immigration judge did consider them cumulatively.
Yeah.
The case I was thinking of is In Re Resinas.
Resinas.
Yes. Where the board's cumulative analysis is a little more thorough than what happened in this case.
And here I submit that when you look at the decision...
Part of the analysis requires the assessment of hardship factors in their totality, often termed a cumulative analysis. Here, the heavy financial and family burden on the adult respondent, the lack of support from the children's father, United States citizens, children's unfamiliarity with the Spanish language, the lawful residency in this country of all the respondent's immediate family, and the concomitant lack of family in Mexico combine...
And here, Your Honor,
to render the hardship in this case well beyond that which is normally experienced in most removal cases. The level of hardship presented here is higher than that, you know.
And here, Your Honor, all of those decisions were considered. They were just were not laid out in one paragraph. But although there weren't any factors that were not considered by the immigration judge. Mm-hmm. There are no further questions.
Thank you. Mr. Murray?
Thank you, Your Honors. Just two quick points. The first, picking up on something the government's counsel had mentioned, this question of whether Olegario is actually in a different situation. The problem with the IJ's opinion on that score is it appears to be a denial in discretion, which would be different, but the discretionary denial seems to be linked back up to this question of a lack of the unusual and extreme hardship. It's hard to separate out him at this point in the proceedings and say, okay, this decision can stand as to him but not as to her. I mean, with respect to these two parents, the record also shows that they were approved for citizen petition visas in 95, and as the USCIS turned their way through the visa numbers, they're about 5 months away from that as far as we can tell.
Who's 5 months away?
Mrs. Sanchez-Luna, Alejandrina, her brother, who's a U.S. citizen, filed on her behalf. And also for Olegario. And they're both collectively about 5 months away. The petitions have been approved. They're awaiting a visa number. And according to the USCIS website, as far as I can tell, they're about 5 months away.
So in 5 months, if things go according to what they hope will be the plan, they'll be entitled to citizenship and entitled to be here?
They'll be entitled to be here, not citizenship.
They'll be entitled to be here.
Exactly. So to separate out the husband and the wife in this stage of the administrative proceedings would seem unnecessary. And then the only other thing I would add is, with respect to Your Honor's point about the language on page A76, I agree with you that it's ambiguous, and that's the point. It's the agency's job to show that it did the work and not government counsel's job to fill in that standard today. As the Fifth Circuit said in Hernandez-Cadrero, just as one straw can eventually break the back of a camel, the cumulative effect of many hardships can certainly add up. We would submit that this case should be remanded for that kind of analysis.
Okay, I want to do things a little bit out of order. Ordinarily, we're finished right now. But if I could ask the government to come back up to the podium for a moment. What about this, in 5 months, they'll be approved likely on the visa list?
I was not aware that they would be approved in 5 months until this morning.
It seems rather silly to... Send them out at this point if all we're talking about is 5 months.
For 5 months.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I don't have any information on their visa petition pending with CIS.
You know, sometimes we send these cases when we think there's some possibility of compromise to our mediation. Would you have any objection to taking this case to mediation just because it seems so silly? To send these people out if they're going to be back in legally in 5 months, the disruption that would be involved with the children and with the parents and so on. Yeah. So would you have any objection to that?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Would you have any objection?
No, Your Honor. We went to mediation once and
so you've been to mediation. Now, were you a participant in that? Yeah. My guess is that you've been added to this case fairly recently. Uh-huh. And at the time of that earlier mediation, did we have this prospect of a visa within 5 months or so?
The visa was further out at that point. The petitions were approved back in 1995, but as you know, those on visa number returned somewhat slowly. It has been since a year or so has expired since we did that mediation. We haven't gotten those. There's reason to think it might work this time.
Okay. Thank you very much. The case of Sanchez-Luna is now submitted for decision, and I'll say the same thing I said before. Thank you very much for participating in the pro bono program. We very much appreciate not only the work, but the quality of the work.
I came up from Chicago.
And did you fly in from Chicago?
I did.
I hope you're enjoying our October weather.
It's much better than Chicago. It's
50
and raining there.
They could use some of the rain here.
And I don't want the government to feel left out. I think working for the government is also public service, so thank you. The next case on the calendar has been submitted on the briefs, NPR Global versus FDIC. The next argument case is A1 All-American Roofing versus Perkins.